Welcome to the My Shamanic Life podcast, your exploration of spiritual ecology and the shamanic and spiritual practices that promote well-being for all beings. I'm your host, Debbie Phil, and I'm here to share insights and practices to get ready, get rooted, and get real about your health and the state of life on planet Earth. We'll explore the wisdom of deep ecology, look at some sad truths about the disappearing more than human world, feel into earth-based practices and teachings, and take action to help restore the wonder and magic of biodiversity to our world. I invite you to discover your passion and power, to unlock your inner wisdom, and to connect with our earth family as you map your own path to service. I am a white woman recording on the Adirondack hunting territory of the Mohawk Nation of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, ceded in 1797 without council approval. I acknowledge that my presence here is the ongoing legacy of settler colonialism, which includes the exclusion and erasure of many Indigenous peoples. I also acknowledge that this land I am on was once shared with species that have been eradicated by those settlers, including the Eastern Cougar, the Canadian Lynx, the Eastern Elk, the Passenger Pigeon, and the Gray Wolf. Settle in now, and wherever you are listening, notice how the earth is holding you. Become aware of what touches the ground, the floor, your chair, or whatever is supporting you. Sink a little deeper into that support and feel your energetic roots sink down into the earth. Feel how you are held, anchored in, nourished and nurtured. You are here. The time is now. I believe there is magic and wonder in the world. And all we have to do is be open to see it. That's why I offer ceremonies as we move through the wheel of the year. They help us see the wonder in each season and tap into the magic for your own growth and our collective evolution. And the magic of Zoom technology means we can gather no matter where you are in the world. The next ceremony is coming up on Friday, February 2nd, for a reimagining of the Festival of Imbolc. Together we journey, do divination, and weave a ritual of hope in the middle of winter. Check the show notes for the link for more information and registration. When my friend Sherry told me she was going to talk about witch hazel this episode because it blooms in the winter, I started thinking about bones again. Jen and I spoke about bones a couple of episodes ago. But now I'm thinking about the bones of a garden. Years ago, I was learning about how to landscape and read that gardens need bones. What they meant was putting in plants that would keep the garden looking interesting in winter. Imported grasses, evergreen shrubs cut into weird shapes, that kind of thing. I'm not kidding about the weird shapes. I'm old enough to remember when everyone had bushes that were sticks with little balls of greenery at the ends. They reminded me of the way poodles are groomed for shows. Looked fancy, totally useless, and hard to maintain. As I've gotten into naturescaping with native plants and creating a food forest that supports the wellness of all beings, my idea of what a garden's bones should be has changed. What are bones for, anyway? In animals, they create support and structure. and they are the last thing to break down after death. So apply that to a garden, which, looking at it my way, is an ecosystem. What are the bones of an ecosystem? What provides support to the beings of that ecosystem, even in the depth of winter? I'm sure people in my community think my gardens are messy. They certainly wouldn't make the cover of Better Homes and Gardens. I don't do anything with the leaves or the stalks of wildflowers that grow wherever in the summer. And I get to watch the chickadees and black-eyed juncos pick seeds off those stalks all winter long. Tangles of native shrubs provide shelter from predators and the weather. Insects, frogs, and salamanders sleep under the leaves. Garter snakes sleep under fallen logs. In all kinds of ways, the garden ecosystem is supported by its bones through the bleak winter. Now I'm pleased to welcome Sherry Kurtikel back to the podcast to tell us, among other things, how witch hazel can become part of the bones of your garden. If you haven't heard one of Sherry's episodes before, Sherry is the CEO of Victim's Voice, an app she created to help victims of domestic violence safely and securely document abuse in a way that stands up in court. Sherry is also studying clinical herbalism with an emphasis on traditional Chinese medicine using Western herbs. At the Herb Whisperer Learning Center, formerly the East-West School of Planetary Herbalism, Sherry is an avid gardener, and she has a line of herbal products under the name Glitter Witch Gardens.
Sherry, I am so glad that you are here, especially because you're a little under the weather.
Yeah, I'm still trying to recuperate from COVID, and it sounds like I have a bunch of cotton stuffed up in my nose. So I apologize for the nasal sound of my voice this time, but there's not much I can do about it. So here we go. So this month, I wanted to do a winter blooming plant because a lot of us in the, Northeast especially, have been covered with snow, or it's just really cold out and everything's kind of dormant. But there's one plant in particular that comes out and blooms around Samhain or Halloween, and that is witch hazel. And witch hazel was a challenging plant for me to find a lot of information, especially a lot of lore on it. It is native to North America, but there are other species that are native to other areas that I'll talk about in a little bit. But as I always do, I start with a poem. So this one, if you go to my blog post, you'll see it should be sung to Pop Goes the Weasel. So here we go. Nasal intact and everything. Here we go. Blooming strong in winter snow, when people are more frail, the trees don yellow, flowers bright. Yep, that's witch hazel. Hamamelis virginia gets native as its label. Eastern half of the United States. Yep, that's witch hazel. Stops cuts and scrapes, fully heating bright. Orange chins and cheeks and nasal. The H in preparation H. Hamamelis, it's witch hazel. Used long ago and recently as dowsing rod to enable. Finding treasures way down deep. Yep, that's witch hazel. So one of the things in that poem that I really love, and it kind of, a lot of people think preparation H, the H stands for hemorrhoids, because that's generally what it's used for. But the H actually stands for Hamamelis, which is the Latin and botanical name of the plant. So I just thought that was really interesting. So it is a winter bloomer. There are, like I said before, so the Hamamelis that Virginiana is really, you find it on the eastern portion of the United States, and it's native to the US. But there is Hamamelis japonica, which is native to Japan, and Hamamelis mollis, which is the Chinese native version. And more recently, there's a hybrid where they took the Japanese and the Chinese, and it blooms later and longer. So most of the witch hazels, well, the witch hazel here in the US usually blooms from October to January, but the hybrid version actually blooms from February through March. The Virginiana has yellow blossoms, and the hybrid version, the Intermedia, has more orange yellow blossoms. So it would be really interesting if you want, all cold season blossoms to plant a mix of the two, kind of, plant them in between each other. And that would look really, really neat. So some fun facts about witch hazel is that its name, it's not related to the hazelnut tree. The witch portion has nothing to do with witchcraft. It comes from a Middle English word, ice, meaning pliable or bendable. And this is really significant because witch hazel has been for ages and still continues, especially in Appalachia, to be used for dowsing to find water, also to find other lost items. And so people still use it to find water and dig wells and such, which I think is really cool. The other thing, if you're going to plant a bunch of witch hazels and you're worried about, well, how do they get pollinated? Witch hazels are self-pollinating. And that's largely because they bloom in the cold and there are fewer insects around to pollinate. So they've kind of adjusted themselves to self-pollinate. So you want to plant them close enough together, but not so close that they crowd each other out. They are kind of bushy trees. They're considered trees, but they're bushier trees. So you want to give them a little space. The other really cool thing is that while witch hazel does produce seeds, it takes those seeds more than 2 years to germinate. So they have to go through what's called a stratification. And that means that they fall to the ground, they go through a warm season, then they have to go through a cold season to harden them off, and then another warm season in order to germinate. So that's 2 years where those seeds will just sit in the ground before they start to sprout. Only about 1% of the witch hazel flowers actually end up becoming fruit. And really cool is when the seed pods do split and release the seeds, it makes a cracking sound, and the seeds can shoot up to 30 feet in distance. So you can end up with, if you have a good hardy witch hazel plant or a few plants, you can end up with witch hazel all over with the right conditions. So plant them on the edge of your woody area. They do like sun partial shade. They usually, because they're shorter, they usually grow underneath other trees. So they're really good, like at the edge of the woods. And they make your wood entrance really beautiful, right? Witch hazel is actually, it's a lot of plants you'll see when herbalists, especially, post information about herbs. They say, it's not approved by the FDA, yada, yada, yada. Witch hazel is one of the few products that is actually FDA approved. So it has a lot of scientific knowledge behind it to back that up. And so it's an OTC, over the counter, but it is considered FDA approved. The witch hazel that you buy, the liquid witch hazel, which is an extract, is actually primarily comes out of a place in Connecticut, a company called American Distilling. So there was a Baptist minister named Thomas Newton Dixon, and he made a fortune supplying uniforms to Yankee troops during the Civil War. So we're talking about a long time ago. And he noticed that people in the area where he was in Connecticut were often had stands of witch hazel where they were selling witch hazel in their backyard, and they would cook it down, and they would bottle it up, and they would sell it because it's really good for healing wounds. And so he was like, okay, well, Civil War's ending. I'm not making money in the uniform industry anymore. So we opened up in 1866, he opened up a distillery in Essex, Connecticut. He had a couple of sons that when Thomas Dixon passed away, his sons took over the company, and they disliked each other so much that they broke the company apart. And they one of the companies stayed in Essex, Connecticut, and the other one moved to East Hampton. So about 40 years ago, there was a gentleman named Ed Jackowitz, and he bought TN Dixon brand and distillery in East Hampton, and then he bought the other son, the competition, in Essex, and consolidated the companies. And American Distilling is still around today. They are the leading manufacturer and distributor of witch hazel in this country. So yeah, right here in the Northeast. The American Distilling witch hazel has, of course, has its hands in the products of Preparation H and Tux pads. It was also, witch hazel was one of the main ingredients in what was the vapor rub, Vicks vapor rub, that was put on your chest when you had a cold. So a lot of really kind of cool and interesting things about, how witch hazel is used. It's really easy to make it yourself. You create a decoction and then cook it down. And it's a lot, I think it's a lot better if you just make your own. So if you have access to witch hazel, you would use the branches, not so much the flowers, but the dried leaves and the branches are what are used for making witch hazel. But if you're going to do that, please leave some of the flowers, because again, if only 1% of the flowers produce fruit, you need to leave quite a bit of flowering. So plant more trees and only use, alternate between what you're using. Witch hazel is really important to native ecology. So it is a food source, especially for several species of moths and butterflies. And for a long time, it was a mystery how witch hazel was pollinated. And there was a naturalist, Bernd Heinrich, and he realized that there was a type of owlet moth that was active on cold nights, but he couldn't figure out how this worked. So after observing for a long time, he found out that these moths hide under the insulation of the leaf litter. So for all you people who blow your leaves and mow your leaves and rake your leaves, stop. There are a lot of insects that live under what's known as leaf litter, or those leaves. So this particular owlet moth would hide under the leaf litter during the day, and then at night, it would shiver its body and be able to raise its own body temperature by 50 degrees, allowing it to go out in the cold at night and find those sources of nectar, which come from the witch hazel flowers. Witch hazel is also a host plant to 69 species of different kind of larvae, including the large lace border, definite tussock, funerary dagger, and yellow-necked caterpillar moths. Also small mammals and a variety of birds, including the ruffed grouses, northern bobwhites, and wild turkeys, eat the seeds. So those seeds that are shooting 30 feet away, leave them there. And deer occasionally will come and nibble on the leaves and the plant and the small branches also during the winter. So the fruit, when it does fruit, is eaten by beaver and cottontail rabbit, and is a minor fall food for black bears, especially in western Massachusetts. So it's a really important plant. It's a beautiful plant. There's no reason why you shouldn't be planting it if you have the ability to grow it where you live. From a medicinal perspective, it is used topically as an astringent, meaning that it tightens the pores and tightens the skin. So it's used a lot if you, as I mentioned in the poem, you get cuts and scrapes. If you have a bloody nose, put some witch hazel on a cotton ball and put it up in your nose. It'll stop your nose from bleeding. It is an anti-inflammatory. So all those cuts and scrapes and poison ivies and all that stuff, put it on and it will cool it down and dry it out and take down the swelling. So it's a great herb to have around. There are several popular varieties, species of witch hazel. I mentioned the common witch hazel, which is the Hamamelis virginiana, which is the one very prolific here in the US. It grows up to about 20 feet tall, and it's the one that the bark extract is used for personal care industry. The Chinese witch hazel, which I also mentioned, the Hamamelis mollis, it's native to central and eastern China, and it produces really fragrant flowers. And it is yellow flowers in the late winter and then a fainter flower in its late fall foliage. The Japanese version, which Hamamelis japonica, it is native to Japan, but it's widely cultivated in other temperate areas, and it produces a really bright yellow flower with green leaves. Then there's the big leaf witch hazel, which is called the Hamamelis ovalis, and it's found in the southeast, and it has red flowers, so a little fire to that yellow. And the Ozark witch hazel, which is probably the furthest west, Hamamelis vernalis, and it's a variety found throughout Missouri and Arkansas. And it has winter blooms of yellow and red flowers. So those are the six most popular that you find. And if you live in the hardiness, USDA hardiness zones of 3 through 9, you can probably grow witch hazel. I would note that recently, as of just, I believe, a month or two ago, the USDA hardiness zone map was updated. So if you happen to visit our blog on the Witch Hazel post, you'll see the new USDA hardiness zone map. So you can check it out and see if where you live maybe has altered a little from all the global warming. And last but certainly not least, we have our Materia magica. So, I mentioned earlier that the branches were used for dowsing. That's very, common that the branches, I said it's kind of a bushier plant, those branches branch out into Y branches, and those Y branches are then cut and used as dowsing rods. If your heart is broken, then carry some leaves with you to help you heal. And if you need to end a relationship, let's say you're in kind of a toxic relationship, carry the bark with you. That will cool things down. And it also acts like an evil eye. So when you have all those beautiful blooming branches, take a few and hang them in your windows and doorways. It wards off negative energies, but I feel like it kind of brightens the inside as well, right? It is aligned to the planet Saturn and the constellation Libra. Its element is fire, and the chakra that it relates to is the solar plexus chakra. So that is Witch Hazel.
That is awesome. I loved hearing about this plant. Well, I knew it was native here, here in northern New York, where I am. It's a native. I did plant some saplings out there somewhere on the edge of my woods. And I have no idea what they're what happened to them. I was very random with planting things at that time. So maybe there's some out there. I don't know. But anyway, thank you so much for being here. And I will link to your blog post in the show notes. So if anybody is interested in checking that out or finding the link to the new hardiness zones, mine did change a little bit. With that new one. Just go check out the link in the show notes. And I am so glad that you were able to be here and toughed it out through the congestion. And I know from having COVID myself, when I had to take a break from doing podcasts, I really appreciate that you were able to do this today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to next month's herb.
Me too.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of My Shamanic Life. Check the show notes for the links I mentioned this week. And remember to like and subscribe to get weekly episodes in your feed with more practices, teachings, and actions so you can get ready, get rooted, and get real about life on this planet. May you find wonder and magic in the beings around you this week. And practice walking gently on our earth each and every day.